Now, tonight really is a special night. You'll notice there are two podiums up here. Tonight is our second Worldview Wednesday. Now, how many of you were here for the first? We did a God in Politics night, remember, because people at Calvary are not afraid to tackle the hard subjects. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to look at faith and science. And the title is, Are They at Odds or Are They Oddly Compatible? And we think this is an important part of all of our spiritual development, you know, to understand that God rules over all areas, including those areas sometimes that people in the press or people in the evangelical community even, and even people in our church think are really at odds. Well, tonight we're going to have an opportunity to listen to two experts in this area. So tonight's topic is faith and science, and we've invited two people to come and speak with us. And those two people are Carl Benzio. Dr. Benzio is a member of Calvary Church. He's also one of our elders, and you may recognize him when you see him come up. Carl is also a very good friend of mine, and we've done a short-term mission trip together. And Carl and I went to Uganda and did some great work out there and actually beat the Ugandan national volleyball team, right, in volleyball. Not true. We didn't do that. But Carl and I have actually spent a good amount of time together. Carl is the founder and the executive director of the Lighthouse Network Ministry, as well as being a local psychiatrist in the Doylestown area. And Carl is going to be here kind of to represent the physiology and the science of body, mind, and brain and spirit, which is an area that Carl is an absolute expert in. To my right is Paula Gossard, a new friend, and actually this is her first time at Calvary. So let's welcome Paula.
Thanks.
Paula is here to be with us specifically for this night. She is a professor over at Philadelphia Biblical University, and her specialty actually is teaching science to Bible students. So, you know, all of us here, we're all disciples of Christ, and we're all students of Scripture. And so Paula is going to help us understand how in the PBU community, and also in her life, how her faith and science intersect. And the purpose of the evening now is to make this kind of feel like a mock debate. It's not really a debate where we're debating one another, but it's an opportunity for all of you, really, to see how a person of faith, of deep, deep faith, who are actively engaged in ministry at a very, very deep and significant level, can also be involved in the sciences. So the way we're going to conduct this tonight is I'll be here, and it looks like I get the seat because these guys have to do all the work. And we're going to start with some questions, and we're going to begin with a question for Paula. And the first question for you, Paula, is what prompted your pursuit of science as a vocation?
Well, I'm going to identify myself age-wise pretty quickly when I answer this question. I became interested in science when I was about 11 years old, and I was laying on the floor of my family's den watching Jacques Cousteau on TV. Good. There's somebody that recognizes Jacques Cousteau. And I knew from that moment that I wanted to study something to do with the oceans, and I never doubted that ever. I went to college and I studied oceanography, and now I'm going to qualify myself as a nerd because then I studied chemistry as well and really enjoyed it. But God sovereignly was preparing me by allowing me to study those two fields for what his real call on my life was, which was to be an educator. And that is my passion. That is my vocation. And I get to be here tonight because he allowed me to become a science educator. So that really is my field. That is my vocation. And that's the platform, if you will, that I'll speak from tonight.
Well, thank you, Paula. And Carl, how about you? You know, a lot of us here at the Calvary community know you, but there are also many who don't, since this is a midweek audience, maybe a little different than Sunday mornings. So what prompted your pursuit of science as a vocation? Obviously not your coordination.
Blind here.
Well, for me, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, so you would think, well, a psychiatrist is sort of odd to start with, and there was never really anything else I really wanted to do. Ever since I could remember, I always wanted to be a psychiatrist. And it sort of went like this. I was, you know, my parents were very young when they got married, had me 9 months and 2 days later. Very young household. They were just saved as late in their teen years. And so the house I grew up in, I was baptized Catholic. And then a short time after, we became Baptist. So by the time of 5 or 6, I was saved about 80 times. I raised my hand at the end of those services and didn't want to burn in hell forever. But, you know, in our family, in our church, I saw that there was, my parents are very bright people, and saw that there was a lot of poor decision-making and struggles in decision-making in the home and people I saw that were Christians. And I was always taught, boy, if you're smart and if you know God, you're going to be a good decision-maker, but saw that that really wasn't happening very much in the people I saw. So I was always, God just always laid on my heart the art of decision-making, what goes into the decision-making process. And I was good in sports as a kid growing up, so I loved sports. And I saw this process of athletics where you have this goal of this ultimate peak performance, being able to have this great product. And sports breaks things down to these very little drills, techniques, steps that you do over and over and over with somebody watching over you, coaching you, and helping you and guiding you. And then you put a couple small techniques and drills together to get bigger ones. And you get bigger and bigger, and then you go and perform, and you come back to the drawing board. Like, well, how come we don't have that in the Christian community? How come we don't have that in life to help with decision-making? So this great show came out in, as a teenager called The $6 Million Man. People remember that show? And so I thought, wow, if we can just make a bionic brain, we could figure it all out. And so, I pursued my undergrad degree was in biomedical engineering at Duke, and then went to medical school. And went on to psychiatry residency to always pursuing, well, how can we figure out decision-making and try to enhance our abilities to decision-make? You know, God's really, in the Bible, has laid out a lot of things about decision-making, but he doesn't give every detail. And so studying the sciences to help us understand decision-making is what I was always impassioned by and what God sort of laid on my heart, and that's what I've gone on to do.
Great. Thank you, Carl. So continuing on with the questions, and we're going to kind of do this in a ping-pong fashion, it seems as though. Paula, the next question for you is, in your article, by the way, there are copies of an article, Paula, written in the atrium. You're welcome to take those, also copies of PBU Today. But in a recent article called On God and Science, you wrote about the faith-science dilemma. Now, without getting too academic, because, we're all kind of pretty mediocre people, right? Right, guys? I'm going to pay for that one. What is the faith-science dilemma? Can you explain it so that we can understand what you mean by that?
Well, I don't think there should be one, first of all. But I think there is. And I think it exists to some degree because, as believers, I think we can feel threatened by science. And particularly when we equate science with evolution. I think the dilemma comes about for believers because we wonder if science is trying to get at some proof that there is no God. And so we're reluctant to engage in science. We're reluctant to discuss it. We feel like we don't probably have good understanding. And I think, if we're honest, we feel threatened. We feel that our faith is being attacked and that science is going to lead us ultimately to completely atheistic, naturalistic ends. Now, we as believers know that that's not going to happen to us, but I think we think that's what science is trying to do. And so I think that's where the dilemma comes from.
Very good. Just to follow that up a little bit, so it sounds as though what you're saying is that there's a perceived dilemma, and I think most of us here in the audience have kind of experienced this for ourselves, especially when we hear the media come out with the, Darwin versus creation and evolution versus creation. How does someone like in this audience, how do we deal with that? How do we grapple with that dilemma? What does it look like when when the rubber hits the road?
Do I get the next 40 minutes?
And then we'll come back.
Two or three. I really am convinced and convicted, and this is why I teach at PBU and why I feel very blessed to be there, that science is an area where we need to strengthen our Christian apologetic. I feel like culture frames a lot of its arguments and its thinking in scientific terms. And as believers to engage that culture, I think we need to become educated about all of science, not just the debate that hits us closest to home, which is the creation-evolution discussion. So that's my goal, is to teach students what is science as a discipline. How does it describe and define itself? What does it claim to know and to understand? What are its presuppositions? And are those biblical in any way? And I ask students to consider the worldview implications of science and to understand science as a discipline. And I think that's a good place for anybody to start.
Great. And we'll be back on this topic later, obviously, because that's really the crux of the matter today. Carl, how about for you? Did your pursuit of science conflict with your faith, or did it confirm your faith?
Well, science definitely confirmed, my faith. Just becoming a doctor, as you see the human body, there's just nothing more magical and amazing and divinely inspired than just the human body. So just, as you get to study and understand the human body, especially the brain, 100 billion brain cells and a quadrillion synapses in the brain, it's just unbelievable. It can only be, divinely created. There's nothing Big Bang or Monkey Swamp, or I'll leave sort of the evolutionist stuff to her. But,
ping pong with the mics. One of the things I was wondering is if we're created from pond scum, is that why there's a ring around the bathtub?
Well, the mind is really the battlefield, for our soul. And trying to figure out, how do we look at, our brain and, how God made us? To me, a definition of science is the study of what God made, how it works, and how we can greatly steward it to glorify God. And to me, the most valuable, resource, the thing that he made is us, and trying to figure out, how do we be good stewards of our brain? Well, the Bible doesn't have every detail of all the different things that he made. And science helps expand on, with the truths of the Bible to give us the details so that hopefully we can be good stewards, of that understanding and glorify him, glorify more. As far as, I've had to, it's interesting that what I do is I'm in the science world as a physician and psychiatrist, and I'm in the Christian world as a member of the church here trying to grow as an elder and using faith in what I do every day. It's been a lot easier to convince my non-Christian friends of the spiritual aspects of what I do than it is to convince a lot of the Christian ministry leaders of the scientific aspects of what I do. But once we sit down and we have a discussion, as Paula says, we sort of break down some of those barriers and fears, it's amazing how they see how in sync things are, and it really opens up their understanding. We just don't spend a whole lot of time in the Christian community looking at science, especially the science of how God made us and how we're to function and how Satan wants to really attack that and interfere with that.
Hmm. Thank you, Carl. Paul, I'd like to ask you the same question. Did your pursuit of science as a vocation, did it conflict with your faith, or did it confirm your faith, and how?
It did both for me. When I studied oceanography, it is what would be considered a physical science or an earth science, and so I had to study a lot of geology. And, of course, you get into age of the earth issues. And the more I studied about how science works, the process of science, the fact that it is peer-reviewed, that scientists critique and correct one another, that before theories are given credence, that they have been through a process of review and modification by many, many scientists. I looked at how science does what it does, the process of science, and I looked at the findings, and I thought, that process seems rigorous to me, in my human understanding. Those findings might be valid, and what do I do with that? And it comforted me, because that was a moment of crisis for me, to understand that God cannot conflict with himself. So what is in his word and what is in his world are both reflections of who he is and are truth. We study both of those things and we interpret both of those things, his word and his world, through fallen, sinful minds. And what has helped me in this wrestling is to realize I could be interpreting the scientific findings incorrectly. We could do the science incorrectly, and we do. I could be interpreting Scripture incorrectly. Although His Word is truth, my interpretation could be flawed. Or I could be doing both of those things incorrectly at the same time. And so I resolved the conflict for myself by realizing there is ultimate absolute truth, and it is found in God. My interpretation is now what I wrestle with. And so I read a lot and I study a lot. And if you came and asked me some specific questions, although I've done this for a lot of years, I would still say I'm not sure I'm still studying that to a lot of the questions that you might ask.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. The next question, I think I'm going to lean back to you again, Paula, and just change the direction a little bit and ask you to kind of speak to us, the Christian community. Do you think that one of the things we hear about in the media and we're sometimes accused of as Christians is we sometimes are biased against, or we're perceived as being biased against science. Do you think that's true? Do you think Christians are biased against their view of science? And if so, how?
I don't want to speak for every Christian, so I'm going to frame this answer in terms of students that I deal with who are Christians. And I would say yes. Given the student population that I interact with, there is a bias, and it's a bias against science. It's a negative perception of science. And I think that happens for two reasons. As I already said, I think because we, in our minds, conflate evolution with all of science. And so we paint all of science with the same brush that we use for evolution, if we particularly view that negatively. And I also think that we are biased against science. Again, it goes back to worldview issues, because we don't recognize often the fact that science as a practice is done, and then people, human people, take that work and apply it philosophically. And they come to conclusions that are really not warranted necessarily by the practice of the science itself. So it's an incorrect application of a perfectly beautiful gift and discipline that God has given to human minds to understand the world, and it is taken to incorrect philosophical conclusions. I think those two things create bias in Christians oftentimes.
Would it be safe to say that sometimes we use science to answer the wrong questions? Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Carl, you have a very strong specialty, and you're well known in the area for that. And I, in fact, have family members that you've worked with and helped. Do you see a bias in the Christian community against science in general, but specifically your field, psychiatry, psychology, and the understanding of human behavior?
Oh, well, most definitely. And piggybacking on what Paula said, it's a lot of time the misuse of the science and how God works. So my field of psychology, psychiatry, the Darwin analog for psychiatry and psychology is Freud. So Freud was an atheist, a Jewish guy, cocaine user, believed in id, sex, being the motivator for a lot of things, and greed, which a lot of people, especially the Christian community, put to the side. But really the Bible describes very similar kind of motivators and behaviors and conduct for us. Trying to look at, well, what is the science, God has given us? Science is just a study of what God made and how it works. And as people, certainly psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists have misused that information and those findings in very distorted ways. But the Christian community often looks at psychiatry and psychology as a very voodoo kind of thing. There's a newsletter that comes out called the Psychoheresy Awareness Letter, which says that anything that looks at psychological principles and understanding and tries to combine them with the Bible is psychoheresy. Sorry for not talking to you guys very much over here. The Bible itself is just a phenomenal book on psychology and psychiatry. It's not complete. It doesn't give every detail of what every brain cell does in the brain. It doesn't cover every situation, but it does expand on who we are, how we were made to function, and how Satan attacks that, and what's the remedy for that in significant ways. So I have books now on psychiatry that were written 4 or 5 years ago that some things have been proven wrong already, yet the Bible is this book written thousands of years ago, and nothing has been proven wrong in it as it relates to psychiatry and psychology at this point. Some very specific areas where I think there's some conflict is a lot of thoughts of psychology is that, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at childhood, and some people have used childhood then to excuse their current behavior, as opposed to just an explanation for why they might do things now, not necessarily an excuse. And that's sort of contrary to, you know, our Christian belief system of us having a free will and being responsible for the decisions that we make. Psychiatric medications, I have a lot of people that have struggled and, you know, significantly for a number of years that finally come in. We're able to put them on some psychiatric medications to help them. And the medical community has this view that psychiatric meds are a cure, and they're not a cure. They're very helpful for symptoms, but they don't cure anything. The Bible really tells us what the cures are, and being able to apply those are what we need to do. But yet, due to the lack of education in the Christian community about psychology, it's hard to interpret findings that we have in science or what people teach about science and be able to look at that cutting-edge science through biblical lenses. And that's what we try to do in our organization. We try to look at the cutting-edge science that we have through biblical lenses. As Paul has said, it's our interpretation of those things that's just real key. And lastly, we're not disembodied souls. You know, we have a mind and brain chemistry. And so it's that spirit-mind-body integration. That's how God made us. And we need to look at all three of those, and there's significant science about all three of those and their interrelation, interconnection. And we need to really understand that and to integrate that. I think that helps us understand how we function better, how we dysfunction better, because Satan has certainly studied us for a long time and knows exactly what to do when our armor is down to shoot arrows to get us to not glorify God, to act dysfunctionally and to be sinful in the process. So working against that Christian bias for those things, a lot of people are out there suffering and shame and in guilt because of depression, sadness, worry, anxiety, fear, past abuse, those kind of things. And they really don't, but a lot of times they are because of the Christian viewpoint of those kind of situations or the treatment opportunities for those people that keeps them away from those. And essentially they have very difficult struggles in life and difficulty glorifying God and being and achieving the God-given potential that God created us with.
And I know that's a real important part of who you are, Carl, is helping other people to reach their full potential. I know that personally and also professionally with you. But help us to understand practically how it works out because, you know, we're all Bible-believing followers of Christ here. You know, in your practice, how does the Bible inform your science and your application of psychiatry? How does it come together practically?
As I said in the beginning, my significant area of passion and interest is that of decision-making. What is the art of decision-making? And psychology has looked at decision-making. The Bible is certainly a book about decision-making, but there's no one specific chapter about decision-making. There's Proverbs and some New Testament writings about decision-making and, don't be conformed, be transformed by renewing of the mind. A lot of verses talk about some active stewardship we have about our mind and how we make decisions and how we take in information. But there's 6 core elements of decision-making. And to me, decision-making is the key competency of all of life. We need to make a decision about who is God, who are we, what is sin, what happened at the cross, who am I going to marry, how am I going to spend my money, what kind of job am I going to go into, all kind of different things really come down to decision making. Just like football is about blocking and tackling, baseball is about pitching and hitting, life is about decision making. And so there's 6 key areas of decision making. The 2 most important are perception, how we perceive a situation, and then how we respond. So perceive and respond. In psychology, we've been able to look at some of those things, but trying to determine, well, what is truly accurate perception and what is really a healthy, good response? To me, that's where faith and science come together, and we get that in the Bible. The Bible, you know, tells us what our eyes that see and ears that hear, how to really see what the truth is and apply that, and then how to, you know, what is the healthy response? What is a godly response? The Bible tells us that. The interesting thing about this was all sort of theory and ideas, But over the last 10 years or so has been a significant advancement in understanding the brain and how the brain works. And recent studies show that our brain does two main things. It perceives and responds, perceives and responds. And now we have a great way of, I wish we had a slide, but I don't know if people can see to some extent, but a way of scanning the brain and doing brain scans. And it's just a phenomenal real-time way to look at the brain and see how the brain is functioning. And what we're finding is, and this is both Christian organizations and non-Christian organizations, as we teach people biblical ways to see things accurately and to respond, actual brain scans improve. As people don't see things accurately from a biblical perspective or don't respond in biblically appropriate ways, their brain chemistry gets better. It gets worse. To me, that's just a phenomenal thing. You know, when we're studying forgiveness, studying parenting, conflict resolution, listening skills, dealing with fear, dealing with anxiety, mood. You know, as you teach people to look at things through biblical lenses and respond in biblical ways, brain chemistry improves. Do it the opposite way, brain chemistry worsens. To me, it's just a phenomenal thing, just showing the accuracy of the Bible, the truth in the Bible, and how to apply the Bible to daily living is just our next step of what we need to do as good stewards of that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Carl. Paul, coming back to you, you have a great opportunity to shape young minds, and I know you take that very seriously. I know from the short amount of time we spent together, you also understand your work as being a force multiplier because you're teaching people who are going into ministry, and they're going to impact others. So you're really in a key role. How does your vocation in science really give you opportunities to share your faith to both believers and non-believers?
You've put your finger on exactly how I think it affects my ministry to believers. My ability to interact with believers is multiplied greatly because of the work that is being done at PBU to train students to engage the culture when they leave, whether that's in full-time vocational ministry or in other professional fields. So that answer is pretty easy. My vocation allows me to interact with students and prayerfully to prepare them to engage the culture in this very tiny specific area. It's very interesting. I'm just about finished with a doctoral program, and Lord willing, I'll defend my dissertation this summer. And I am finding it very interesting because I attend a secular university. And the response that I get when people find out that I'm a believer majoring in science education is remarkable. It is scathing at best, and I can't even think of a rotten enough word on the other end of the spectrum, because the ingrained notion in most non-believers is that Christians don't do science, that Christians believe myths and fables and fairy tales and stories. And they are very disparaging. So I have a great opportunity to witness. My dissertation is actually about the interaction between the worldview that a person holds and their acceptance of science. So it's very interesting, and I am particularly looking at the worldview of Christian students. Well, my whole doctoral committee suddenly began speaking in very spiritual terms when we started talking about this, the whole process. People care. People are interested. And so I find it very interesting that some of the, if you push science all the way back and start thinking about philosophical presuppositions of science, there are a lot of worldview questions hidden in there. Where did we come from? What are our origins? And so even within the realm of science, people are asking questions about worldview issues. And so, excuse me, if we can engage them in a dialogue within a framework that they feel like they understand and they feel like is truth, which is the framework of science, and help them to see how even within that they are asking worldview questions, it gives us a platform to jump from and to start to talk about. So that's probably a bigger answer than you wanted to that question, but I think it gives us a lot of opportunities to witness.
Well, would you be able to potentially share one of those opportunities that you might have had in the past, like when you're dealing with your in your secular university for your doctoral studies? What might that day look like, or that opportunity look like?
I spent 18 hours in a van traveling to New Mexico to do some field studies. And I traveled there with a man who was from Lebanon. And so we stopped the van five times a day on the way to New Mexico so that he could pray. And between that experience and the fact that we were studying science together, I could engage him in worldview questions based on our common understanding of the scientific process and the scientific method. And obviously, there was no conversion experience there. He was a dedicated Muslim. But we did come to the point of acknowledging that all of our interpretations of scientific evidence are filtered through a worldview. And that really to have a productive discussion, the science itself wasn't the issue, our differing worldviews were the issue. And so we had a great discussion, 18 hours there, 18 hours back, and a whole week together there. So,
Very good. Thanks for sharing that. And I know, Carl, from what I know about your practice and also your Lighthouse Network work, that you know you interact with people who are very troubled at times. You interact with people who are in danger sometimes, potentially suicidal, and are really kind of at the end of their rope. And I know from conversations, not specifically about patients, but about situations, that you also minister to families. And I mean, anyone who has someone who is struggling in their family, it impacts everyone in the family. So what kind of opportunities do you see in your application of science for sharing your faith?
Yeah, the beautiful thing about what I do is it applies to everything. You know, all your personal life, whether you're in the business world and psychology about dealing with coworkers and bosses, supervising people, watching movies, the politics, psychiatry and psychology really apply across the board to everything. So it gives me a wonderful opportunity and a platform to really look at and apply my science and faith together to get into places. Certainly the first place is just myself, just my pursuit of science. Has just, has had a dramatic impact on my faith and my walk with God, and hopefully that, impacts my wife and my kids and the people that I'm in contact with. There's daily opportunities, like Tom said, of people I deal with in a clinical setting, and I get referred a lot of different people. I think I'm thought of as a good psychiatrist in the community, and I think why that is because I infuse the truth into what I do, and I talk about spiritual things, and I have some of those spiritual conversations that most mental health providers don't have. And with that understanding, there's certainly a care for the patient that's a little different, and then an understanding I can help them see that makes things a lot better for them to understand. So, I get referred people that aren't believers, that have significant issues of either faith crises or homosexuality or some significant things that would, a physician would think, wow, that's, not consistent with Christianity. But I still get referred those because they know the different kind of things I've dealt with and some of the beneficial results that God's allowed me to have in those kind of situations. So being able to just reach out, just my practice to the non-believer. I've been able to work in a bunch of different hospital units and in secular programs, and being able to just talk about spiritual things when we're in rounds with the staff just helps open their eyes to biblical truths and how biblical truths apply to as we're working with patients. And it really helps them in their spiritual journey in the process. And people that are Christians that work in those fields, it gives them the boldness to be able to start talking about their faith, both with patients and with other mental health workers that they work with, which prior they might not have done that. I've been in the ER in situations where somebody's had a knife or had a gun and had been able to defuse those situations. God's just sort of blessed me with an ability through education and preparation and understanding he's in control and I'm not, to be able to just go in situation, use the skills he's given me and in pretty interesting ways. And so a lot of times the staff is just amazed at how the situation was able to end peacefully and beneficially for everybody. And it just gives me an opportunity for me to talk about God, my faith in Him, His sovereignty, His control, and how I'm able to use that and practically apply it into these kind of pressure, difficult situations. God's given me the opportunity to be on radio, to talk about science and faith. And, you know, it's easy to start with science, since that's what I'm most knowledgeable about. But then science has a nice segue, as I've talked about, being able to get into spiritual conversation and spiritual discussion. As you're talking about depression, alcoholism, despair, those kind of things, it's an easy segue to talk about spiritual discussions. I had an opportunity to debate Kevorkian's lawyer on TV about physician-assisted suicide. And again, being able to, in a very secular debate, usually bring in some very significant Christian principles and biblical principles about life and compassion. I talk about Muslim. A lot of people here supported our organization in going to Iraq. We were able to, as scientists, as physicians, able to take a team over to Iraq to speak to all Muslim doctors and healthcare professionals. And in that, and again, start with science as the basic appetizer, entree into our discussions and education, but then very easily able to get into spiritual discussions about things, whether it's leadership and using Jesus as an example, or whether it's talking about brain chemistry and what the Bible says about healthy functioning. And we had two Muslim physicians get saved as a result of our mission work over there in Iraq. Being able to testify in Congress. A lot of times Christians have a difficult time presenting. You know, we have a lot of very difficult issues in front of us that are very controversial, whether it's evolution and I forget the creator, divine or intelligent design, controversies, or abortion, Plan B, contraception, physician-assisted suicide. There's a lot of very controversial issues that have significant biblical principles and truths that need to be applied to them. But a lot of times Christians, especially our Christian politicians, say, well, it's this way because God said so, or because that's the way I believe. But as Paul said, there's a lot of science that validates why those things are the correct positions, why God's positions are the correct positions. So I'm able to articulate the psychological and biological sciences about brain chemistry in our body to help articulate why this moral stance, or this godly or biblical stance, really is the correct stance in a situation. One last thing, as I'm getting my buzzer here just about, is we have a Christian program in Melbourne. The Melbourne Institute is a rehab facility, and we have a Christian program that we started there. And it's a very powerful program. But on Christmas Eve, I had some people from Big Calvary Chapel down in Philly come and lead a praise and worship and service there. And we had 12 people saved in that facility that didn't know Christ before they were saved as a result of that Christmas Eve service. So if it wasn't for our science being able to be in that situation with the science, that would have been an opportunity that, obviously God knows how to save these people if we don't, but it was just a great opportunity using science to reach people that might not have gotten reached or would have been difficult to reach otherwise.
Thanks, Carl.
Paul.
I got the
Yeah. We're reaching the end. We have about three or four minutes, and I'm going to ask Paula to kind of try and wrap things up for us in the next 3 or 4 minutes. And what I want to ask you is, in your opinion, help us all to understand how faith and science are compatible. How are they compatible? And this eve of Darwin's, the anniversary of the 200th birthday of Darwin, and we're all going to hear this tomorrow in the news and everything, how do we deal with this faith science thing? How are they compatible?
Two, 3 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, the article that Tom referenced addresses that issue specifically. It discusses how do you integrate science and faith. So if I may take a little right-hand turn, I would say my encouragement would be to, if you're interested in this particular area, to seek out some information about the integration of science and faith. There are any number of books and websites that address this issue specifically, and it really is so broad that it would be hard to capture in 2 minutes and do it justice. I think as believers, a lot of times we do focus on the issues that are seemingly most important and most urgent to us, which may be the evolution and creation issues. But science is broader than that, and the discussion in the world is broader than that. And I feel very strongly that Christians get sort of shunted aside because culture doesn't feel that we can engage in a meaningful way about science. So my encouragement would be to become educated about the process of science itself, the bigger picture of science. What does it claim to do? So that you can recognize when science has been taken to inaccurate or inappropriate philosophical conclusions. I think that's probably one of the most important things we can do as believers, so that then our discussions with the unbelieving world are on the appropriate plane, which is the plane of presuppositions and our biblical worldview versus a non-biblical worldview that really holds out no hope.
Well, thank you both. I think I've already gotten the zero statement, but if you want to take 30 seconds, go ahead.
Science. Understand how God wired you and how you can function better. If you can function better understanding, you know, who you are and what you can do, you will shine such a bright light to the community that they really won't care what you believe in as far as creation and evolution. You will shine so brightly for God that they will want that.